Section 2, Rebuilding the Economy. As you read, look for how the cattle industry became important to the territory, the growth of railroads in the territory, and vocabulary terms, railhead, drover, quarantine, royalty, and strike. As the Native Americans began to rebuild the economy of the territory, changes occurred. Herds of cattle became more numerous than herds of buffalo. Wagon tracks were soon joined by railroad tracks. Coal mining became more important in the territory, and the first hints of the vast wealth beneath the ground began to appear. Cattle drives. Longhorn cattle thrived on the huge open grasslands of Texas. The supply soon outgrew the demand in Texas, and ranchers wanted to move their cattle to better markets in the east. To reach those markets, ranchers had to drive, walk, the herds on cattle trails to the railheads, the end of the railroad lines. The nearest railheads for the Texas drovers in the mid-1800s were at Kansas City and St. Louis, Missouri. From the railheads, the cattle were shipped to slaughterhouses in Chicago, where they were processed for shipping to eastern markets. After the Civil War, the number of cattle in Texas rose to 3 to 6 million head. The war had taken a toll on livestock in the north and east, where cattle were in short supply. Cattle that might only sell for $2 each in Texas could easily bring $40 and more elsewhere. Even before the Civil War, some of the first Texas cattle were driven north through the Indian Territory. Indian Territory's rich, untouched grasslands lay between the Texas cattle and the Kansas and Missouri railheads. Right-of-way and grazing leases were usually worked out with the various Indian tribes that owned the land. Crossing the Territory. The cattle herds did not follow the exact path of earlier herds, except at water crossings. Cattle grazed as they were slowly herded north. Usually, they were only able to cover 10 to 15 miles in a day. A cattle drive was often organized by one or more ranchers who hired a head drover or trail driver. The head drover was responsible for getting the herd to a certain market. Most herds consisted of 2,500 to 3,000 cattle. For the long drive, 6 to 10 cowboys and 6 to 8 horses for each cowboy were needed. The trail boss earned about $90 a month, and the cowboys made $25 to $30 a month. Trail crews were made up of white, black, Hispanic, and Indian men, although a few adventurous young women, disguised as men, sometimes joined a drive. Work days were long and lasted from sunrise to sunset. The cattle drive itself usually lasted 1 to 3 months. A chuck, slang word for food, wagon, and cook were essential to the cattle drive. The chuck wagon had to be stocked with coffee, dried beans, salted meats, flour, cornmeal, salt, and other food staples, as well as water and a few tools for repairs. Cattle trails. Cattle trails wound around mountains and heavy woods when possible. Swift-flowing and deep rivers and streams, often coupled with quicksand, claimed the lives of many of the trail hands, horses, and cattle. Drinkable water was necessary, and natural shelter was desirable. The first cattle trail in the Indian Territory was the East Shawnee Trail, which somewhat followed the Texas Road. The trail crossed the Red River near Colbert's Ferry, Bryan County, and Preston, Texas, then headed northeast across the territory to Baxter Springs, Kansas. Although heavily used, the East Shawnee Trail posed challenges: rough timbered areas where cattle could get lost, and marshy areas that slowed down both cattle and drovers. As the railroad inched westward, new cattle trails were blazed further west. In the Boggy Depot area, the West Shawnee Trail branched out from the East Shawnee Trail in a more northerly direction toward Abilene, Kansas, the cow capital of the world. The west branch of the trail went by present-day Shawnee and meandered north through what is now Kay County. However, when outbreaks of Texas fever, a tick-borne disease, were discovered in the Longhorns, Missouri, Kansas, and other states stopped the cattle drives from entering their states. Cattle buyer Joseph McCoy of Illinois convinced Kansas and Illinois officials to again allow Texas cattle to enter their states. He then built livestock pens at the Abilene Railhead where the cattle would be held before they were shipped to the Chicago stockyards. McCoy sent word to Texas cattlemen that the stockyards at Abilene were open, and soon cattle were once again streaming northward through Indian Territory. The most direct route from Texas to Abilene was a trail that Scottish Cherokee Jesse Chisholm used as he hauled trade goods. The trail followed much of present-day Highway 81. In 1867, the first year the Chisholm Trail was used, about 35,000 head of cattle were moved over the trail. By 1871, some 600,000 cattle were herded north on the trail. The trail was abandoned in the late 1800s. Another Kansas quarantine, a restriction of people's or animals' movement to stop the spread of disease, and settlers moving further west, led to a new trail through Indian Territory that was called the Great Western Cattle Trail. Texas drover John Lytle was the first to move a herd along the Great Western Cattle Trail from Doan's Crossing by the North Fork of the Red River north to Dodge City, Kansas. 3 to 5 million cattle had been driven on the Great Western Cattle Trail by 1893 when the last reported drive was made by John Blocker. Some ranchers in the Texas Panhandle used the Tascosa and the Jones and Plummer Trails to cross No Man's Land, today's Panhandle, as they moved their cattle to Dodge City. A destructive blizzard in 1886 decimated herds all across the plains region of the country, which contributed to a lower supply of livestock. Barbed wire fences, settlers, more railroads, and the refrigerated railroad car all contributed to the end of the long cattle drives. Railroads. After the Civil War, the Wells Fargo Company restored stages on the old Butterfield Overland Mail route. The restored stage route was short-lived, however, because railroads were inching their way toward Indian Territory. The Transcontinental Railroad. In 1863, the Central Pacific Railroad Company struck out from Sacramento, California, using Chinese immigrant labor to build a train track to the east. A few months later, the Union Pacific's Irish and Mormon workers spiked the first rails at Omaha, Nebraska, then continued track construction to the west. On May 10, 1869, the two railroads were joined with a golden spike at Promontory Summit, Utah, as east and west symbolically joined as an undivided nation. The long and grueling trip from San Francisco to New York, which had once taken 6 months, could now be completed in a few days. The new Transcontinental Railroad brought about other changes as well. Native Americans often attacked those building the iron horse tracks. Railroad companies responded by hiring marksmen to kill buffalo, the Indians' main food source. Many railroad laborers died from Indian attacks, disease, and extremely dangerous conditions while working on the project. Tracks across the territory. Just as a train's locomotive gains speed, the building of tracks across the country also gained momentum. The southern branch of the Union Pacific Railway was organized in 1865. Later, it was known as the Missouri-Kansas-Texas Railroad, MKT, or the Katy. The 1866 treaties had opened the way in each Indian nation for two railroad tracks, one running north-south and one running east-west. In 1870, A railroad bed was surveyed along the well-used Texas Road. The first railroad track in Indian Territory was laid in 1870. By October 2, 1871, the Katy Line had reached the Verdigris River north of Muskogee. Gibson Station, with a round table for turning the trains around, was built north of the river in 1872 for passengers and freight. Bridges were eventually built over the Verdigris and Arkansas Rivers, and the line continued southwest to Colbert's Ferry on the Red River. In May 1871, the Atlantic and Pacific Railway Company began building an east-west line through the territory. The A&P line entered the territory in the northeast from Seneca, Missouri, and continued to Veneta. In 1882, the A&P reorganized as the St. Louis and San Francisco Railroad Company, or Frisco, and extended the east-west line to Sapulpa. The same year, the Frisco started a line in the Choctaw Nation, which ran from Fort Smith, Arkansas, southwest to Hugo, and across the Red River to Paris, Texas. The Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad, known as the Santa Fe, built a north-south line from Kansas to the Gulf Coast. By 1887, the line had reached the Cherokee Outlet and continued south through present-day Ponca City, Guthrie, Oklahoma City, and Pauls Valley. The Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific Railroad, commonly called the Rock Island, constructed a line south from Caldwell, Kansas, into Indian Territory, passing by present-day Medford, Enid, El Reno, and Duncan. The Rock Island track followed much of the same path as the Chisholm Trail. Railroad tracks continued to be built in the territory, and by 1905, there were over 5,000 miles of track crisscrossing the land. Coal mining. The Native Americans knew that coal was the rock that burned. Blacksmiths used coal in forges to heat and reshape metal to make tools and horseshoes. Coal was also used for heating homes and businesses and for powering the burgeoning number of trains. After the Civil War, veteran James J. McAllister attended school in Fort Smith, where he discovered a geologist's notes about extensive coal deposits in the Choctaw Nation in an area called the Crossroads. McAllister and a partner, J.T. Hannaford, obtained a trader's license and opened a general store at the Crossroads in 1870. McAllister married a Chickasaw woman and gained citizens' rights in both the Chickasaw and Choctaw nations. McAllister soon started the Oklahoma Mining Company and leased coal mines to an operating company. McAllister eventually split the royalties with the Choctaw Nation. A royalty is a payment for the right to exploit a natural resource. Royalties provided a steady income to the Choctaw tribe, as did asphalt and timber production for railroad ties. Railroad workers and miners provided a market for produce and meat, but they also created an increased demand for the opening of the Indian lands to white settlers. In 1888, the Choctaw Coal and Railway Company built a railroad from Worcester Junction to the Crossroads, which later became the town of McAllister. Branches of the railroad went to the coal mines. Many communities, such as Krebs, Colgate, Lehigh, and Alderson, sprouted up around the coal mines. Other coal fields were mined in the area of the present-day northeastern counties of Tulsa, Rogers, Wagoner, Craig, Okmulgee, and McIntosh. By 1889, there were over 2,000 men working the mines in the Choctaw Nation. The area became a melting pot of Czechs, Slavics, Hungarians, Belgians, Germans, Italians, Swedes, Frenchmen, Englishmen, and others. In 5 years, the number of miners doubled and included African Americans. Railroads, wanting a steady supply of top-grade coal, leased or bought almost half of the coal fields. the Katy Railroad owned the largest coal company, the Osage Coal and Mining Company. Mining was dangerous work, and the number of fatal accidents in the mines was high. Disputes about hours worked and hourly pay occurred often. In 1888, operators and miners agreed to a 9.5-hour workday and a salary increase that was above the national average. In 1894, the coal companies cut the miners' wages by 25%. On May 10th, about 1,000 miners went on strike with a noisy demonstration. A strike occurs when workers refuse to work until their demands are met. Eventually, 5,000 men and women joined the strike. Deputies were called to the strike area, as were 3 infantry companies and 2 cavalry units from Fort Reno. Several intruders were removed from the Choctaw Nation. After almost 4 months, the strike was over. The worst coal mining accident in the Indian Territory happened on January 7, 1892, when an explosion ripped through Osage Coal and Mining Company's Mine No. 11. Approximately 100 men were killed, and about that many more were injured. Oil springs. Oil springs, or seeps, have been present throughout Indian Territory for centuries. Many people believed that the oil could be used to treat arthritis, rheumatism, and dropsy. Spas, health resorts, that were developed at Boyd Springs in the Chickasaw Nation and at New Spring Place in the Cherokee Nation, attracted people from Arkansas and Texas who came to bathe in the oil-coated waters. A few early oil wells were drilled in the territory, but the production wasn't significant. Lewis Ross, a brother of Chief John Ross, struck oil while drilling a deep water well near Grand Saline in 1859. Oklahoma's first oil company, the Chickasaw Oil Company, was organized in 1872. The market for oil in the United States was small in the late 1800s compared to the demand for coal. The invention of the automobile a few years later brought new importance to oil. It's your turn. Number 1. What was a railhead? Number 2. What minority groups were involved in building the Central Pacific and the Union Pacific Railroads? Number 3. Which natural resources proved profitable for the Indian tribes?